When we were kids, we all read his books, even though many of the words seemed like gobbledygook. There was Green Eggs and Ham and Cat in the Hat, The Sneetches and The Lorax, all stories that kids still read and some know by heart. But the man behind them had a very different start to his writing career than you might expect. So to get all the details, I went and checked with an author who wrote all about Dr. Seuss. And as for these clunky rhymes, I beg your excuse. Brian J. Jones is a biographer. His new book is called Becoming Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel, and the Making of an American Imagination. I caught up with him recently to talk about the author of some of the most well-known children's books of all time and asked him about Geisel's advertising career and whether his later work was influenced by what he did while creating ad campaigns for some pretty big companies.
Oh, definitely. I mean, part of what you learn when you're doing advertising is to make every word count. And, you know, to write concisely and to write to the point, which is exactly what he has to do, especially in books like Cat in the Hat and books moving forward from the Beginner Book imprint, where he was working deliberately within a very confined and restrictive word list. It was a word list that was educator approved. It was the word list that was in the Dick and Jane reading primers. So he had practice in working with short sentences, short words, you know, very quick plots from those days doing advertising. The other place where he really learned how to be concise and learned how to, you know, make plot count the most was when he was in the Signal Corps during World War II. He was stationed in California making propaganda films, but his commanding officer was Frank Capra. And Frank Capra is the one who, you know, would put his scripts down in front of him and say, I'm going to underline everything in your script in blue that advances your plot. And when I hand this back to you, if there's not very much blue in here, you have a problem. So Capra's the one that really taught him, again, how to make every word count. So he really came into writing these books that had these tightly restrictive vocabularies, very comfortable working within it because he had done that in advertising, where his very famous ad campaign was Quick Henry the Flit. Four right. words. Every one of them matters.
How much of a departure from what had been was Dr. Seuss when he started writing kids' books, Mulberry Street, Bartholomew Cubbins, especially some of those early ones?
Right. No, great question, because that was one of the things I found really fascinating about him, and ultimately one of the reasons we called the book Becoming Dr. Seuss, is because he's got sort of three different arcs of his career, and those early books come out more from, not because he wanted to necessarily tell compelling stories for kids, though that certainly is what happened to him later in his career, but Mulberry Street comes out of him feeling sort of creatively stifled by doing advertising work at that time. He was in these very restrictive contracts with Standard Oil, for example, while he's doing the campaigns for Bug Spray and for Motor Oil, and can't do a lot of outside projects, but one of the things he was permitted to do were kids' books. So he writes Mulberry Street because it's something that's not prohibited under his contract, and finds out he's pretty good at it, so that one's written in verse. And then he does the 500 Hats of Bartholomew Cubbins, which is not in verse. But he starts experimenting with the form and doing different things in his work and in his books, and he ends up writing Horton Hatches the Egg as sort of his big book before World War II happens. But that's the first arc of his career. What happens eventually is once you get to Cat in the Hat, that's when he starts working within the pedagogy, working within those pre-approved word lists, creating these books that really do teach kids how to read, but are doing them in a fun and compelling way. So that evolves from his work that starts off just telling kid stories. And something like Bartholomew Cubbins is almost a traditional fairy tale almost. It's got kings and castles in it. So the work really sort of changes in both its tenor and intent over his career.
Did you get the sense that maybe he also evolved in the sense of wanting to write kids' books? I mean, you write about it and you just mentioned how he started off doing it almost because he was able to and needed to do something else. But it kind of sounds like he didn't really set out to become, you know, perhaps the world's foremost children's author.
Right. In fact, he almost gets derailed from writing kids' books several times in his career. Hollywood really turns his head at one point. After World War II, he starts going in and touching up movie scripts, and he writes a movie, The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, which ends up tanking and sort of saves us from having Dr. Seuss sucked away by Hollywood. But a lot of things are sort of turning his head because he was never quite certain if it was a career that he wanted to do for a living or whether it was worthy of doing for a living. He really does have this sort of epiphany in 1949. He teaches a writing course out of the University of Utah, and that's the moment in his career when he has to kind of write it all down and write down how he writes books and how he illustrates them and how he comes up with verse and how he comes up with plots. And I think that's the moment that things sort of gel in his head, that he's like, you know what, this is really important work. And this is a good profession. And so that's the moment he starts really committing himself to doing that full time. That said, it still takes him a little while. He has to keep doing the ad campaign work to pay the bills. He can't really start writing full time, writing kids' book full time, until Cat in the Hat comes along in 1957. And by then, he's 53 years old before he has a first big blockbuster that permits him to write kids' books full time.
How did he think about the balance between writing kids' books that kids would want to read and would be fun, but also, you know, having them have some kind of at least decent lesson for them at the end of it?
Well, he often cautioned people to try not to write books that were intentionally preachy or, you know, seemed intentionally messagey. He really sweated the end of The Grinch, for example, because he didn't want it to be too overtly, you know, moral. And he ends up doing the Brotherhood of Man ending where they all sit down and they break bread together. So he really tried to be sure he wasn't being too overtly preachy or, you know, appeared to have an agenda. Now, that said, he did several times in his career intentionally do that. Yertle the Turtle, for example, is him taking on Adolf Hitler. In fact, he says he almost drew Yertle with a Hitler mustache at one point. The Lorax is a book that he said, I wrote because I was mad. He was watching development sort of encroach on the hillside where his studio was in La Jolla, California, and really wanted to say something about managing our resources responsibly. So that one, you know, that's another one that had an intentional agenda. So he often said that he would leave you to decide what you thought the message was, and I don't think there was really a wrong answer for him, but there were several times that he did actually set out to say something, and those are two really good examples of that.
What did Geisel make of his career, especially toward the end, looking back at, you know, 60-plus years of making kids' books? What did he think about it?
You know, he had come to the point where he knew what he did was important. He knew he was good. He was actually somewhat frustrated late in his career that he thought he wasn't getting enough credit for doing a lot of great things. He was thrilled when he finally got the Pulitzer Prize very late in his career because I don't think he would ever say it publicly, but he really thought he was worth it. He thought he was worthy of the Pulitzer Prize, and he got a Pulitzer Prize that was aimed at the entirety of his body of work, not just a particular project, which is probably the way it should be for Dr. Seuss. So I think he knew he was good. He was comfortable with his legacy. He knew he had made reading fun. And I think that to him was the most important part of his legacy, is he chased Dick and Jane out of the classroom with the Cat in the Hat, you know, sweeping them out the door along with Thing One and Thing Two. I think that's one of the things he was the proudest of.
All right. That's Brian J. Jones, author of Becoming Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel, and the Making of an American Imagination. Brian, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Mark, my pleasure. Thank you.